Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Up State. Jacob had a question on the live stream. Facebook.com/TheFanUpState, The Fan Up State on YouTube, The Fan Up State on Twitter, The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. If you'd like to join in and watch all 4 hours of the show live all 5 days of the week, it's a wonderful opportunity to do just that. Jacob had a question. He said, will NIL be separate from the $20.5 million. He said, quote, so in theory, the $20 million is just extra money, so your argument could actually work if the football is already in a good position. To my understanding, the way that this house settlement is going to structure that is that school NIL, that is collective NIL, is going by the wayside. The $20.5 million will specifically and solely be from revenue sharing. That is all of the revenue collected by the schools. $20.5 million of that can go back to the athletes. That is for non-Power 4 schools. Power 4 schools all in. They will all be doing the $20.5 million. The rest of the schools have the option to opt in within the next 6 days. They got to be in by the 15th. Have the option to opt in to the $20.5 million if they wish to do so. The $20.5 million is what will go from school to athletes, all of them. That is the cap of what they can give out. Now, it is up to their discretion, assuming they fit within federal laws, Title IX, all that good stuff. It is up to their discretion how it is that they dispense that money to their athletes. However, third-party NIL deals are still allowed. That is to say, if Lenora Sellers wants to go get a deal outside of the school, and if Bob's Used Cars decides that they want Lenora Sellers repping Bob's Used Cars whenever they get an opportunity, then Bob's Used Cars can still make a third-party NIL offer to Lenora Sellers, and Lenora Sellers can still accept it. However, there is now created by this settlement a platform called NIL Go. Because if you're making a platform in 2025, you must stick either Go or Plus on the end of it. That's the rules.
Like Pokemon Go or something like that.
Sure. You must stick Go. HBO has been both HBO Go and Max and Plus over the years. Like, they're hitting all of them. So NIL Go has been propped up. And what this platform is designed to do is when a third-party NIL offer is made to a student-athlete, that athlete or their representatives will go into this platform and they will upload the contract offered. That contract will then be evaluated by officials at the school, in the conference, and in the NCAA or the College Sports Commission. And they will determine and make sure that that contract is fair, it is adequate, it is appropriate, et cetera, et cetera. And they will say, yes, this NIL deal is valid and the athlete can sign it. And then Lenora Sellers can sign that contract with Bob's Used Cars and he can start rocking the polos and the quarter zips and the hoodies or whatever that Bob's Used Cars provides him to rep the logo. The school and the NCAA will now have a couple of things on the table. By the way, that is for NIL deals over $600. Any NIL deal worth less than $600 doesn't have to go through this, right? Because, you know, when we get to the amount of money that we are talking about, when we are talking about the millions of dollars in NIL deals, if a kid's going to go out there and he's going to scrape together, you know, $10,500 deals to get to that mark, okay, I mean, that's going to be a hell of a lot of work for the kid. But, you know, we're talking about athletes who are looking at making tens of thousands, hundreds of thousand dollars. Cooper Flagg made $28 million. We're talking about them, right? That's when we start talking about making it fair and competitive across the table. So the NIL Go platform that comes out of this will have athletes go and register the NIL offers over $600, $600 or over, made to them so that the enforcement and compliance folks across the college sports platform can look through it, make sure it's legal, make sure it's good. Now, there is one question mark that we have discussed a couple of times, and that is the vagaries in all of this that will have to be settled before we really get into moving forward with the new era of college sports. One of those words that has been talked about, or one of those phrases that has been talked about, is the concept of competitive fairness. How do we make sure that NIL deals across the board are fair? And it's a fair question that has to be asked. One of the phrases that I read in the breakdown of this legal argument is that data for NIL deals, third party outside NIL deals, data from third party NIL deals will have to be evaluated and analyzed by the NIL Go system to determine whether the NIL third party deal has, quote, a valid business purpose, end quote. Because here's what you don't want, and this is what it's designed to prevent. What you don't want is a school, and this is why I've said as well, the challenge to schools and conferences from the Rob Brown Show, is to not take advantage of loopholes within the game to gain a competitive advantage over everybody else. Because once any individual school starts to go out and try to create a competitive advantage by skirting the rules, by playing in the gray area, you open the door for everybody else to do it. And once everybody else starts to do it to keep up with you, we're going to be right back where we were, just with a new set of problems. What you don't want is a school to go to Bob's Used Cars and say, hey, Bob's Used Cars, we got this five-star kid coming out of Appalachia High School out of Louisiana. We really want this kid. And we need to make sure that, you know, we're able to give him X amount of revenue compensation next year, but we got to get him on the hook somehow. So, hey, Bob's Used Cars, what do you say that we make you a title sponsor of game day for a big game, and in return, you make our kid an NIL offer for X hundreds of thousands of dollars? Well, here's a kid that comes from Louisiana who can't drive yet, who's never owned a car, and is sponsoring a business that, you know, otherwise probably doesn't fit in with who he is, etc. Now, this is a bad example because you can make the argument, and I think a very valid one, that, like, it doesn't matter if he's never driven before. He's hawking cars to other people. But somebody steps in, and it becomes very clear that Bob's Used Cars is spending an amount of money on advertising via NIL deal they've never had. It's not sustainable, whatever. This isn't a valid business reason. This is thinly veiled pay to play, which is one of the things we're trying to get out of college sports with this settlement, is the concept of pay to play. So they'll evaluate, is it a valid business purpose? But again, kind of vague, right? What do we mean? How do we define that? Then there is the second sentence, and this is the one that I read this morning, and it jumped off at me as, well, that's going to be tough to figure out moving forward. NIL Go and the College Sports Commission will evaluate whether a third-party outside NIL deal is, quote, within a reasonable range of compensation, end quote. Now, what the hell does that mean? I mean, I can give you some, like, fringe thoughts, yeah? If a college is thought to be bringing in, after a football season, they make a total of $270 million, right? Like, that's their total revenue brought in. And we know that they can split, or they're obligated for the big schools to split 20.5 in revenue sharing. Let's say that an NIL deal gets signed with a kid for $50 million. Because let's be real, Cooper Flagg made 28, most of that from two companies, right? New Balance and Fanatics. But let's say New Balance, let's say Under Armour steps in. And Under Armour is the official apparel provider for XYZ State University. Under Armour steps in and they say, we're going to offer $50 million worth of NIL deal to this kid. I'm not saying that this is the case. I'm saying the fact that you can't tell me it's not is the reason we got to get rid of the vagaries. They say we're going to offer $50 million. And let's say this school, for the sake of Rob Sucks at Math, made $200 million in total revenue last year. They may step in and go, wait. You are going to sign an NIL deal that is valued at 25% of the entire revenue of this school. Is that competitively balanced? Is that a reasonable range of compensation that one basketball power forward or one football quarterback is worth 25% of the total revenue of a Power 5 school? See, here's the thing. There's going to be some people that go, yeah, it's valid. Is Lenora Sellers going to be that big of a deal for South Carolina football this year? Yes, if he reaches the reasonable metrics that we are applying to him. Yeah, I would say that's a huge deal. If Lenora Sellers is a Heisman Trophy finalist, if he's in the running for the Davy O'Brien, if he's in New York City at the end of the year, if the Gamecocks make a playoff appearance because Lenora Sellers threw for 8,000 yards with 200 touchdowns and no picks, is it reasonable to say he is worth a large percentage of South Carolina's total revenue? I'd say the answer's probably yes, right? But the problem is that the vagary, a quote, reasonable range of compensation. Who's going to determine that? How are they going to determine that? Is there going to be a formula in play? All right, each school gets to take this revenue and divide it by F and then multiply it by X and then divide it by the sub factor of C1 minus C3. Like, is there a formula in play that we can plug in the numbers and determine that this is the number of any particular given athlete? And do we factor other things into that? If Lenoris goes and wins the Heisman this year and then inexplicably says, yeah, I won the Heisman and we got to the playoff, but, you know, I don't want to leave Columbia without a natty, so I'm coming back for one more. And also, the Saints are drafting first, and I damn sure don't want to go there. So I'm coming back.
Sounds like a pretty accurate depiction.
The second one more than the first. You're not wrong. If he says, I'm coming back next year, and he has won a Heisman, and he's taken South Carolina to their first college football playoff appearance, and they won two games. Hell, maybe they made a natty. Shock of shocks, right? If he does all that, and then he says he's coming back for a third and a final year as QB1, how do we determine what his reasonable compensation is? He would be the most visible football player since Tim Damn Tebow. How do you figure out what's fair and reasonable for a range of compensation for him at that point? I don't know. But that's kind of the point. It is fantastic that the settlement's been approved, that we have at least a very rough roadmap for the direction that we're going, that we have some base guidelines that have been put into place. But there's still a lot of vagary that has to be navigated, that has to be figured out. This is probably the biggest one. And the reason I'm hinging on this one is because to me, I think it is wonderful when the world provides an apt metaphor for a situation. In the last segment of the show, we walked up and down the website that is already launched for the College Sports Commission. And if you go look at that website, which is collegesportscommission.org, if you want to double check my math here, I think it is fantastic that that website is up. I think it is fantastic that that website is up and is up so that we can all take a look at what the results of the settlement are. You can go there and you can read the actual settlement so you can have a legal knowledge of what has been said, declared, and we're moving towards. It has the baseline of what the College Sports Commission is. But if you go look at page number one of that website, it is just a silver-lined, optimism-fueled mission statement for what this thing is supposed to do. There's no meat to it at all. And I think that's a pretty apt metaphor for, yeah, we've got the settlement, all right? So the table has been set. The table has been set. We've all sat in our chairs. Everybody's at the table together. The SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, the Big 12. Everybody's at the table together. The table's been set. The plates and the forks and the knives and the napkins are all down. All right, we all got our drinks. Now we're just waiting for the meat and potatoes to show up. Now we're just waiting for the main course to be served. And the website is the wonderful metaphor, and the example that I just gave you of the vagaries have us all smelling dinner in the air, but we got no idea what's about to be put on the plate in front of us. The chef's still in the kitchen trying to cook that whole thing up. So I think that's kind of the point. I think it's fantastic that the commission is going to be operated not by the NCAA, but by the conferences. And in doing so, the conferences are asking all of the schools within themselves to sign a joint agreement that has already been drafted. We've talked about this on the show a couple of months ago when this rumor started going around. A drafted resolution that every school will sign. In fact, I don't remember if it was one of the commissioners that suggested this or if it was just a discussion point amongst them. But there was the discussion going on that after this proposal was drafted, some of the conferences might require their schools as a condition of continued membership in the Power Five Conference that they sign this letter that says we understand the rules, we agree to the rules, we shall abide by the rules, and if we are found in violation of the rules by the College Sports Commission, we will make good and we will not sue in order to get over the rules, to skirt around the rules. I kind of hope that happens. Do I think there may be a holdout or two? And maybe we'll find out. But by having the conferences in control of the commission, the conferences can tell their schools, here's what y'all gonna do, and each conference can hold each other accountable and punish each other by an enforcement arm that they are connected to and in charge of. We have the guidelines, we have the roadmap, the table is set, now we're just waiting to eat. Texas said, Rob, when will we see the launch of the Rob Brown Show GoMax Plus? I don't know what was the answer. I'm still working on what the subscription cost is going to be. All right? Back after this on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show on your radio. It is the Fan Ups. They game two of the NBA Finals last night. The Oklahoma City Thunder knock off the Indiana Pacers 123-107. It was just a dominating effort from start to finish for the OKC, which is very interesting considering the little beat the books breakdown there from BetMGM Network was me saying I'm taking the Pacers in seven. As a bet with a 10-1 ticket. And I did, and I would, because it was one game. I don't want to panic. I would also like to point out for those that have panicked and said, oh, the series is over. The Pacers have played three series to get here. They played Milwaukee in round one. They played Cleveland in round two. They played the Knickerbockers in round three. Here's a fun little stat for you. The Pacers, great one, have lost one game by 15-plus points in all three of those series. The Bucks blew them out by 15 once. The Cavs blew them out by 15, I believe, in game two. And the Knicks blew them out by 15 points. All three series that the Pacers have played in to get to the NBA Finals, they lost at least one game by 15. In all three games that they lost by 15, they won the next game. So there was a stat going into last night's game that Oklahoma City had lost five games in the postseason coming into game two. They are 5-0 in games following a loss in this postseason. All right. Now, that stat came into play last night as they kept the undefeated after a loss streak in the postseason alive. They have not lost consecutive games in this postseason. Now the other number becomes true. And again, as both a fan and a wagerer, these types of numbers, these types of trends are something that have to be considered. Trend number two is that Indiana has lost one game by 15 now in all four series of this NBA postseason. Round one against Minnesota, round two against Cleveland, round one against Milwaukee, round two against Cleveland, round three against the Knicks. In all three, they lost a game by 15. And in all three, they came back and they won the next game. Lonzo and I back in the first hour when we were doing a mild and loose quick breakdown of game two from last night, agreed on one thing above everything else. Feels like if the Pacers lose game three, kind of feels like the Thunder roll to an NBA Finals. Now, I will say, all that matters of this two-gamer back to Indiana, all that matters for the Pacers is they have to split. The worst they can do is a split. They got to go 1-1 at the crib. If they go 2-0 at the crib, I think they're winning this thing in seven. If they go 1-1 at the crib, I think they could win this thing in seven. If they go 1-1, now it's a best of three, and you hand home court advantage back. You enter with a 1-1 split, obviously, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know. If you enter, you do enter game three back at the house, it is now a best of five, and while game seven is at OKC, you have home court advantage. Three of the remaining five are at Indiana, and you're tied 1-1. It's best of five, you got three games at the crib, they have two. If you split 1-1, that obviously reverses. Then it becomes a best of three, and games 5 and 7 are at Oklahoma City. So a 2-0 sweep would feel great. A 1-1 split's the worst they can do. I will also acknowledge that. It kind of feels like after the Momo built up last night, by a dominating effort from the Thunder. That if they win game three, and especially if they win game three by 12, 15 points, if they roll the Pacers in game two, at that point I'll say, okay, it's cooked, it's over, it's done. Because what the Pacers have in their favor and the thing that I expect that Rick Carlisle is going to be bringing up to that team between now and Wednesday for game three is that this team in the entire postseason run has been a bounce back team. A team that takes one on the chin, gets knocked down, but they get up again. You're never going to keep them down. This is a team that has taken 15-point losses. And those 15-point losses, by the way, I think are a big part of the reason that everybody with a microphone, except me, doubted the Pacers' ability to keep this close. Well, they did that in round two against Cleveland, too, right? Oh, Cleveland, best record in the East. How can the Pacers keep up with Donovan Mitchell? And they did what they had to do. And then in the series against the Knicks, kind of the same thing. Oh, the Knicks beat the Celtics. How in the world? Yeah, Jason Tatum got hurt. But how in the world can this Pacers team that doesn't have a true superstar keep up with the Knicks? And what do? They took one on the chin. They got up. They made it a series, and then they finished it. It's the same narrative that the Pacers have faced the last two series in a row coming from the same people who set the narrative. Oh, they just don't got them dogs in them. How can they hope to keep up? They ain't got the guys. Well, game one, they show you they got the guys. Now, I will say, I think every game that Indiana wins in this series is going to be a close game. I don't think the Pacers are going to blow out the Thunder. I think the Thunder, in fact, I was on with Sean Levine on Saturday on the Infinity Sports Network for a few minutes. And he said, do you think there's a Thunder blowout in store? And I said, yeah. In fact, I think it's in game two. I don't think the Thunder are going to take that one on the chin and not respond in game number two. I could see a blowout. It's not game two I'm worried about for Indiana. It's game three. If you get blown out, if the Thunder show you everything on the cards in game number two, and I think they will because I don't care which team you are, neither of these teams can afford in games one and two and then games three and four. My thought to Sean was neither one of these teams can afford to lose both at the crib. If either one of them lose both at the crib, then they have to win both on the road or else the series is over. Either direction. I can see a game two blowout. Game two is not what I'm worried about for Indiana. Game three is what I'm worried about for Indiana. This does feel like it's an Indy must win. Now, maybe they get me wrong. Maybe Indy could lose game three, go down 2-1, turn around, split it, win game four. Now we got a 2-2 series heading into the final three. But it is more important. This one is more about, and I try my best not to break down sports with stuff like this, but sometimes you got it. It's a vibes thing for me. It's a vibes thing. If you let Oklahoma City blow you out in game two, and then you let them come into Indiana and get you in game three, even if it is a close game. If you let them get you in game three, what happens? OKC starts to feel themselves a little bit. Now, I thought they were feeling themselves a little bit coming into this series. Why wouldn't they be? They were plus, or what was it, minus 750 to win the series? I mean, they were vibing a little bit. And I think because they were vibing and they built up an early lead in game number one, the Pacers were able to kind of throw a little bit of a sneaky puncher chance haymaker in there late in that game and get him. I think after game one, the Thunder probably weren't feeling themselves as much. So you got the best they had in game two. I think in game three, probably a little mix of the both, right? Indiana's now taking one on the chin. They're now looking and going, all right, boys, we got to get that right. Oklahoma, I'm not saying that they're going to make the same mistake and get overconfident, but they might. They're a young team, right? Not a ton of finals experience. I said that to Sean on Saturday. He's like, wait a minute, Rob, Pacers don't have a ton of finals experience either, to which my response was no, but they have high-pressure playoff experience that's been building up over the past 3 years now, right? They've made playoff runs 3 years in a row. They've been in those high-pressure situations. Maybe it's not the finals, but they feel better about it, I think, than the Thunder do, or at least they could and should. So I think for me, game three feels very much like it's not that I'm not going to go so far as to say, I'm going to walk it back. I'm not going to go so far as to say it is a must win. I am going to say if they lose game three, They're down 2-1 with one more in Indy before it shifts back to Oklahoma City. I am going to say if they drop game three, they're going to put themselves in a real bad spot. Not because they're down 2-1. We've seen plenty of teams go down 2-1 and win the NBA Finals. It will not be because they are down 2-1. It will be because OKC now has the best of both worlds. They will be vibing because they're big-time favorites who are confident, feel good about themselves. I think the cockiness will have been checked, but they will be vibing about how they're playing. Number two, I think OKC will smell blood in the water. Let's go back to OKC up two games. Let's go back to OKC, and we can put this thing on the verge of elimination. That way, if we got to come back to Indiana for game six, if we got to come back here, we've got them on the verge. And if we can beat them on their court, great. But if we don't, we know we're going to seven. We know for a fact it's coming back to OKC, worst case scenario. If I'm Indy, best case scenario is you find a way to finish this thing in six. But in order to do that, you got to win both at the crib. I think game three is a game which will determine, are the Thunder going to be the best version of themselves going into game four? Or are the Indiana Pacers going to look the Thunder in the eye and go, you got one on us, but so did Milwaukee, and so did Cleveland, and so did New York, and we answered the bell for all three. This is who the hell we are. We are the cardiac kids, the comeback cats. Don't worry about us. We're on your level. If the Thunder get to the point where they feel like they are the better team and they're playing like it, there's no coming back from Indy. But if Indy can stare the Thunder in the eye and go, we're on the same page as you, don't you worry. We're on the same level. It's a basketball game. Then Rick Carlisle becomes the determining factor. Coaching wins this series for the Pacers, maybe in six. Game three is not a must-win great one, but I feel a hell of a lot better about the Pacers' chances if they get game three.
Well, I think we'll be able to tell within the first quarter about how the Pacers are playing. And also, I've heard tell, I don't know how true it is, that home court advantage is pretty lively. Some dude told me on the radio. So it's got to be true.
I mean, yeah, obviously, especially when somebody says it on this show.
Right. So, because you're not going to downplay Mario and his, you know, excitement and how much he has told us that arena it means something.
Yeah, Mario also said they were losing the series in five. So, I mean, he may still be right. They've won one. That's the requirement to lose it in five. We'll see. Here's what I will say. As somebody with functioning eyes and a television set, I can tell you the Pacers' home court is absolutely lively. So is the Thunder, by the way. They're the best home court advantages in the postseason. That's not why they're here, but it does help. What I will say is, I think it is lively. I will also say, I don't think that this is a team that you can say we'll know by the end of the first quarter, because the Pacers ain't won a game in the first quarter yet.
I'm just talking about watching how they're playing.
See,
I could tell in the first game that they're in it the entire way. I could tell in the game yesterday they were not.
I agree yesterday.
There was just a look to them. If they come out and they play aggressive and their shots are dropping, then they got a shot at it.
I would disagree with you about game one. They had 19 turnovers in game one in the first half. In fact, quite the opposite was true. I had no damn idea what this team was going to do in the second half, after half number one. Pacers got to win I'll tell you what they have to do, though. They do have to win the first or second quarter in game three. They cannot let the Thunder build up another 18-point lead and then think, okay, we'll beat them in the fourth.
Yeah, going into halftime for the third game in a row, being down by that much, that's not good.
In game one, they were down, 14 or 18 at the half, and they fought back. Game two, they did the same thing, except the Thunder went, we know where you beat us, and we're not going to let it happen again. So the Pacers have to be at least in a tie, maybe 2-point deficit at worst in game three. We'll talk more about it, but when we come back, John Blau of the Post and Courier will check in with all things Clemson Athletic Department and get John's thoughts on the House v. House v. NCAA settlement that dropped on Friday. That's coming up next on the Rob Brown Show when the Fan Upstate.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
AM on a Monday. That means it is time for us to welcome into the radio broadcast a young man who covers the Clemson Tiger Athletic Department for the Post and Courier, John Blau, kind enough to give us some time every Monday morning. John, welcome back, big dog. Good to have you. How many legal documents have you spent the last 2 days poring over? And I assume the answer is a lot.
I mean, I guess I'm kind of like the people in Congress that don't look at the bill all the way through. I have not read the entire settlement or anything. So not a ton. I have not damaged my brain that way.
I glanced at it earlier because the new College Sports Commission's website is up, John Blau, and it has absolutely nothing on it. It's incredible, with the exception of a link for the settlement terms that were agreed to. I pulled it up, I looked at it for 8 seconds, and I went, no, I'm going to need a hell of a lot more Adderall to get through this thing. But that being said, knowing what we know, hearing what we've heard, with all the discussion that came out from spring meetings, from the conferences a couple of weeks ago, through the blathering talking heads on television since this thing dropped on Friday night, since the announcement that the settlement has gone final, where is your head at as far as what it means, where we're going, how it's going to impact Clemson, or just any general thoughts that you've put together, if any?
Yeah, I mean, this is what we've been expecting for months, so it's not really much of a change other than they grandfathered the roster limits in so that you can have designated athletes who, you know, Dabo Swinney talked about having to tell a bunch of kids that, hey, you can't come back next year because we're reducing the roster size. It'll be interesting to see if any of those athletes come back, some of those walk-ons, because they've grandfathered some of this in. But obviously everything else is kind of what we expected in terms of revenue sharing. They got the NIL clearinghouse, NIL Go, I guess it's being called, that's going to, you know, vet any deal over $600, even though they're saying it's not fair market analysis. It's, you know, it's a range of things in terms of your stature as an athlete, your reach, your what market you're in, all these things. It could be a range of pay. So maybe that's a little bit different in terms of defining those terms. But obviously the, you know, direct paid athletes from schools, we don't know exactly what Clemson is paying its athletes. They have not released the contracts. We actually asked for those. They said that they're trade secrets, basically, the amount they're paying each sport. But we have heard that it's going to be upwards of, you know, 80%+ of that's going to go to football. So you're looking at about, you know, $15 to $16 million for the football team. So a whole bunch of stuff there. I don't know what you really want to dig into, but yeah, it's, we've been expecting this for a while, and it's just kind of now going into effect.
Yeah, I think it really is, and I think this is probably going to be true for most of us, John. Like, the first couple of days after the settlement approved is I think, going to be a bunch of hypotheticalizing, right? Like, trying to come up with different scenarios and figure out, okay, what does this mean for this scenario, that scenario? But I think the big thing that I was most interested in was the word I've been using on the show today is vagaries, right? Like, you talked about the concept of, and this is one I've been hammering this morning, the fair market compensation. Who the hell gets to decide that? Is there a formula in place? I guess for me, the big thing is we've got a roadmap. We've got some, like, very wide guardrails, has been the words we've been saying for the past 3 or 4 years now. Dabo Swinney last week specifically said, he was talking about the portal, but I think it's apt for all of it. We just want some rules. we have them on a very wide basis, and now it's going to be a matter of taking away and diving in on the specifics. So what I've told the audience, and I'm curious if you would agree with this, is we are a long way the way where we need to be, but we're still a long way away from whatever this is going to look like in its finished, polished product.
Yeah, because like you said, vagaries, I don't think we understand what's going to happen the first time, let's say, the NIL go rejects a deal. Does the athlete, are they okay with that? Do they then try to reframe it, or do they just sue them? Because I don't know if this NIL go has much of protection against maybe being, you know, brought up for antitrust claims in terms of you're trying to prevent a person from getting the money they think they deserve based on whatever value the business is going to give them. Because, you know, the old saying is your market value is what someone's willing to pay you. So and it's kind of interesting how they try to, again, go away from the definition of fair market value. That's not that. It's a range. So that they're kind of they're trying to dance around that term a little bit, I think on purpose, because they know that they might be in trouble there. But yeah, we have rules. We have an enforcement arm. We have all that stuff. At the end of the day, how much does it actually work? How much is it challenged in court? Does this, you know, is the NCAA as feckless in enforcing rules as it has been for the last 2 or 3 years? Because obviously they've been saying for a long time, pay for play is not allowed, all that. And what we've had for the last few years is basically pay for play with absolutely zero guardrails. So yeah, it's obviously a step in the right direction, people would say, but exactly where those steps are going to take us and how it's really going to work at what pace, it's still pretty much a mystery.
I think one of the things of this settlement that is the most interesting to me, John Blau, is the fact that this College Sports Commission, which is, again, all of this on a surface level, we have had now approximately 46 business day minutes where the deal has been in effect, the settlement's been in effect, is that this College Sports Commission is designed to be set up and run by the conference powers, not the NCAA itself. And I honestly think that's a good idea, because if the conferences are unwilling to be regulated by an outside voice, allowing them to at least have some say in how they are going to be regulated, even though this may lead to more court cases down the line, is at least one way that you can get them on board with having those regulations. That being said, one of the biggest concerns I have is, if you put the clowns in charge of the clown car expecting that they're going to drive it the right way, you can't be sure it's not going to end up off the side of the cliff. I'm glad that they are there, but it is going to take every school in every conference that is governed by this commission to play by the rules, to make sure that the rules are played by, I guess is the right way to put it. So I think it's a great step in the right direction. I also wonder if the folks who set it up are just inherently trusting the schools to play by the rules and do the right thing, and if schools are going to be willing to do that in the long term.
Yeah, I think I saw maybe a month ago, I forget how long ago it was, that maybe the conferences themselves were going to have the schools sign, you know, documents saying that, you know, you're going to follow these rules, and if not, you can lose your conference or NCAA membership, and trying to enforce the rules that way. And obviously, to bring it up to the conference level kind of maybe reduces the amount of exposure the schools themselves are vulnerable for, because it's obviously at a conference level that they're enforcing these things. But yeah, it's like we've seen obviously with conferences and conference realignment and, you know, all of the, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten looking out for themselves and the ACC just trying to survive and all that stuff. We've seen how, you know, hunger games it can get at the conference level in terms of just existence, and now you're going to rope in, you know, revenue sharing and rules and regulation and enforcement, and how is that going to be done evenly? Or are people going to try to do things to, you know, stretch their own advantage a little bit? I don't know. So yeah, it being at the conference level, like you said, it might be a good move for several reasons, but at the same time, you know, it's not necessarily going to end up in a direction where everything's fair and equal and things aren't going amok, at least to a certain degree.
John Blau with the Post and Courier joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. This may be a question that is kind of vague. It may not, John Blau. A lot of schools have played very close to the vest, or maybe just don't have any idea how they're going to act and operate under whatever settlement rules came out. Have there been discussions within the athletic department of Clemson as to how this is going to impact them, plans on how they handle the revenue sharing allowance of $20.5 million, or has this been kind of a, we got to see what the map is before we can determine the steps we're taking to follow it?
Yeah, again, I'd put it a Freedom of Information Act request, try to get the revenue sharing contracts to be able to add up these numbers and see exactly how they're splitting it up. That got completely denied in terms of them saying it would be a competitive disadvantage for people to know exactly what they're paying their athletes. So we don't have any hard figures. I have heard, though, from talking to people in the athletic department, that the idea is that you split up the revenue based on the revenue or split up the rev share by the revenue that's coming into those sports. So football generates, if you look at the percentages, about 82% of the revenue at Clemson. And so they would get about 82% of the rev share for their athletes. Now, does it end up being 85% maybe because football feels like it needs a certain advantage to be able to compete with other schools? Is it maybe, 79% because basketball comes in and says, wait, you can't give us, 10%. We're not going to be able to compete with that share. So I think that's kind of been a little bit of the ambiguity. I'm sure that Clemson's dealing with a little bit of that internally in terms of trying to satisfy all parties. And probably nobody's going to end up being completely satisfied other than, obviously, the thing you got to feed is football, because that is your major bread and butter. If you're trying to be competitive in that space, you got to give them as much money as possible. So probably, again, like 15 to 16 million per year under that cap, probably going to football, and everything else is going to get pennies, I guess, on the dollar at the end of the day.
Whenever the NCIS episode about the House settlement comes down, I have no problem with John Blau getting the cameo role as the lawyer who knows it all. John Blau from the Post and Courier, my man, I appreciate your time as always, big dog. I know that's kind of an off the reservation style set of questions, but you've done a phenomenal job covering this event. So I appreciate you sharing the knowledge with us, brother. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Rob.
You got it. John Blau of the Post and Courier joins us again every Monday at 8:40. The big news of the weekend, the House v. NCAA settlement was agreed upon last Friday evening. As far as what comes next, the answer from most of us in the business is, I don't know. We'll see.
I was very interested about their answer to his FOIA. I mean, unfair advantage? That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I to some degree think that makes sense. As much as you know Rob Brown, he's a big believer that things should be taking place in the sunshine, I also understand when you have $20.5 million to distribute around your programs and you want all your programs to be successful, but you also know where it's most important for them to be successful, it would be a hindrance to say this is how we're setting up our rev share, especially if not everybody has to put their plans out there. Because if you come out and you go, all right, we're giving X percent of our $20.5 million to football, then South Carolina right down the road might look at that and go, okay, Clemson's doing this and they're putting this much money here and this much money. And we feel like the best way for us to be competitive is to split it up this way. And Clemson doesn't know what South Carolina's doing. So I understand that. And I also think that the concept of rev share is absolutely a tool which athletic departments will have to be very smart about in order to guarantee them the most success in the most places with limited rev share dollars to give away. I don't really have a problem with schools keeping that close to the vest. I know it's silly and it's not the same thing, but that would be kind of like a media member at a pregame press conference going, hey, Ryan Day, what's your game plan? Yeah, no, I'm not telling you that.
Yeah, I get that's not really the same, though.
I literally said this isn't the same.
I know, and I'm
but it's the same principle.
I'm seconding the fact that you said it's not really the same. I get what you're getting at, but I don't know how you can compare this thing. It's just
if two businesses are going into the market at the exact same time and one business knows what the other investment strategy is, and the second business has no idea where the other business is putting their money, one business clearly has an advantage. If for no other reason, then I know what they're doing before they do it, and I can go ahead and set everything up around beating them.
Is it more, over at Clemson, they're paying their quarterbacks a whole lot less than we do here at South Carolina. So if you come to South Carolina, we guarantee you more money. Is that what you mean, like that?
I think that can be a part of it.
Okay.
Right? I think that can be a part of it. I think it could be a matter of, okay, we know that they are putting $17 million in the football, so we're going to put $18, right? I think it could be a matter of, okay, Clemson's doing $70 million into the football program, but of that remaining $3 million, two of that's going straight to basketball. All right, well, we want to keep up with basketball too, so now we can shape our revenue sharing to make sure we're on par with them. It's just knowledge of where a competitor is putting their money gives you an advantage if they don't know the same thing about you. I know what we are going to do, though. We're all going to sit back, kick back, relax, and enjoy the dulcet tones of a sports flash.
I wish I could talk like the weather guy. The NBA Finals are tied at a game apiece after a 123-107 win for the Oklahoma City Thunder last night. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 34 with 8 assists, and Jalen Williams added 19. Alex Caruso scored 20, and Aaron Wiggins got 18 with 5 made threes. The Atlanta Braves were swept by the Giants with a 4-3 loss yesterday. Spencer Strider went 6 innings, giving up all 4 runs and striking out 5. In all 3 games, the Braves gave up a lead, including leading twice yesterday. The Braves start a 3-game set at Milwaukee tonight. Also tonight, Edmonton and Florida face off at 8 for Game 3 of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, this time in Sunrise, Florida, after a double overtime win in Game 2. The Florida Panthers are favorites to take a series lead entering the contest as a minus 140 betting favorite. Hour number 4 of the Rob Brown Show coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.